Hey guys, this is your host Savannah. We just want to start this episode with a little bit of a trigger warning. We do mention an awful lot of sensitive issues in this series. We are just wanting to make sure that we don't upset anyone or have you listen to anything that you don't want to hear. So just know that before you listen to us, and we hope you can still enjoy the content.
I was on Twitter the last day and I saw this guy had posted a screenshot from Tumblr.
Right.
Of, I don't know if it was a guy or a girl or what the story was, but basically this person was able, like she watched, or he watched Shrek so many times, loved the movie so much that they knew like the whole movie off by heart, word for word, everything scene by scene, right?
Right.
When they used to go on long car journeys, the movie used to play in their head. They used to like sit in the back seat and the dad would be like, oh, do you want to listen to the radio? And they'd be like, no, I'm just going to watch Shrek.
How? Like, in their head?
I don't know. Like, I'm presuming photographic memory or something.
But even at that,
I wouldn't be able to do that. Like, they used to go to bed and, you know, like, you'd read a book or whatever.
Right.
They used to just lie in their bed and watch Shrek. And then their dad used to come in and be like, go the fuck to sleep and stop watching Shrek.
That is insane.
Wouldn't you think they're catatonic? Like, they're just lying there on their back staring into the fucking ceiling.
Yeah.
You would not be like, what is wrong with that one?
I was like, what the fuck?
I don't think I've ever liked a movie that much.
No.
But Shrek is a really good movie, like.
It is. I can't argue with that.
True, but how many times did they have to watch it to be able to do it?
Yeah, you know, kids though, like, I used to watch Spirit every fucking day with Anya.
That's true, you are a proper horse girl though as well at the same time.
Do you know?
Okay, we should probably get on with this.
I mean, like, better late than pregnant, but sure.
I want to talk about Shrek more though.
Welcome to the first recorded episode of the Cesspool Podcast. I will be your host. I'm Savannah. With me, I have my good friend, Elizabeth.
I actually feel so weird you calling me Elizabeth. It just feels like I'm getting given out to.
I'm sorry, I never call you Elizabeth, but...
Just for like reference, just everybody guy, call me Lizzie or Liz. Like, I'll deal with it. Elizabeth just makes me want to get sick. Like I'm uncomfortable. It doesn't suit me. It makes me feel like an old woman and I'm not able for it.
With us also, we have our super quiet friend, Quiva.
Well. I don't know what the fuck to say.
It's okay. That's understandable.
Hello.
You can clearly tell we're not professionals.
No.
We just,
I'm gone so red.
We can talk for a lot of hours and we thought, you know, maybe someone might like to listen to us. So the three people that stick with us throughout this, we thank you and we appreciate you and forgive us. Forgive us for what we are.
I guess prepare.
We're trying to be entertaining and we're probably going to fail.
We'll give it a go.
We're trying and that's
exactly.
What counts.
Give the old college try that.
So we're going to be talking about murder, mysteries, monsters, folklore, anything you can think of that's weird and wonderful, we're going to cover it. But today in particular, we're going to talk about the murders or true crime, really, that got us interested in the weird and dark and wonderful things that we all, as three people and three friends, are interested in. That is why we are gore whores.
Perfect title.
We have no idea which one of us is going to go first today, so
nope.
We got a roll for it. Because we're super indecisive people. So we go... Above 10, it's Lizzie. Under 10, it's Quiva.
That's what I wanted. Yeah.
Yeah. Rock, paper, scissors was just not working out.
Yeah, rock, paper, scissors does not work.
It never does with us.
It is legit a one. So, Quiva, you go first. Do you want to tell us what your story is? What inspired you today?
Okay. I chose the story of Sylvia Likens.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I heard it for years ago. I don't know where I found out about her, but once I did, I was obviously really interested in the whole story. And I spent like days upon days reading the trial transcripts and everything. I just found it really interesting. So I thought I should give a bit of backstory, you know, to the whole situation so you kind of know the baseline.
Well,
right?
I don't know anything about it, so I'm
yeah, like I'm really foggy about it.
Okay. So in 1928, in the middle of September, Gertrude Van Fossen was born in Indiana, right?
Mm.
That's all they kind of know about her early life. But when she was 11, her father died of a heart attack in front of her.
Oh, fuck. Shit.
Yeah, so that obviously wasn't ideal.
Scarring.
Not a fun time.
Then 6 years later, she dropped out of high school and married her first husband, John Banisevsky. Probably wrong pronunciation, but yeah. So that's him.
I mean, all you can do is give it your best go.
Yeah.
Around that time, 4 years later, Sylvia was born to her two parents, Lester and Elizabeth.
Mm.
She went by Betty, though.
Eh. Sorry, anybody out there that goes by Betty.
So Gertrude was married to John and Sylvia was born then a few years later. In the meantime, Gertrude and John divorced after they had four kids. Paula, the oldest, Stephanie, John, and Marie. After that, she married this guy called Edward, and that only lasted 3 months, and then she divorced him. She remarried her first husband, John, and had two more kids with him, Shirley and James.
That is so many kids.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. She re-divorced him again, met this other guy called Dennis, and had a kid, Dennis, with him then, pretty much straight away. He wasn't having it. He wasn't a fan of her. So he left, and he left her with 8 kids.
Fuck.
I mean, it sounds like no man was a fan of her. The amount of divorces, I can't even count how many you mentioned, and it's been like 30
She married
seconds.
Two men, and she was with the last guy, but she remarried the first husband twice.
The first guy.
First guy.
Would she not have known that was a mistake?
Good lord.
It's always a mistake.
Like, she couldn't stick him the first time around. What makes her think the second time?
Honestly, no backsies, guys.
So she's been divorced 3 times, which is wow. So ideal. So by 1965, she was single and living with her 7 children. She had really bad depression, apparently, because of obviously all the bad stress with all the boys.
And having 7 children and...
kids by yourself.
You know.
Yeah, obviously probably had no money to fund their lives.
Lady and... Cave is ruined. No man is going to want to enter that ever
Absolutely
again.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, literally. And she'd also had a recent miscarriage. So she was obviously not very happy in herself. Aww. She was getting childcare checks off her first husband, John, pretty regularly, like once a month, I think. But they weren't very regular. Mm-hmm. You know, he kind of missed very often.
Yeah.
So she had to, like, she did cleaning and ironing and sewing and all that kind of stuff to make money.
Right.
For, you know, to help feed the kids, basically. Their rent monthly was $55, which is about $450 now. Yeah.
Well, that's really good.
Like, for, yeah.
Yeah, but trying to support 7 kids on top of that, like, and feed them, that's a fucking lot.
I mean, yeah, if you don't have, like, a steady income, yeah, that's going to still be a struggle regardless of how good we think it is. So.
Yeah, especially, you know, even with clothes and they were all, like, 16. Mm. Anyways, later on in that year, July 3rd, Sylvia's mum. Sylvia was a middle child. She had 2 older fraternal twin siblings and 2 younger. There was her older brother and sister. There was a boy and a girl. The girl, I saw a few things. One of them was that she was adopted off because her family were carnival workers. So, yeah. So one of them was that the oldest girl was adopted off. And another story I saw was that she was actually married. So I don't know which one was true. Either way, she's off doing her own thing. So there's the older brother, then there was Sylvia, and then there was her younger sister who had polio. She had like a bad leg from having polio when she was younger, and a younger brother who was Jenny's fraternal twin as well. So there was 2 twins in the family.
Okay.
So obviously the parents were carnival workers, and it wasn't really a suitable lifestyle for 2 young girls because all the traveling, and you know, it's kind of dangerous anyways.
Of course.
So
like, they would not have been protected at all.
No, not at all.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, the 2 boys were able to work with the parents, but obviously they had a problem with the 2 younger girls because Diana, the older sister, was fine. She was off doing her own thing. Jenny and Sylvia, the 2 younger girls, they made friends with these 2 other girls, Paula and Stephanie, which are Gertrude's 2 older daughters. An agreement was made by Lester, Sylvia's dad, with Gertrude, that Jenny and Sylvia would live with Gertrude for a few months until like November, just while, you know, they kind of figured out their situation. They're trying to buy a house, trying to figure out what they were going to do. So it was just to kind of tide them over for a few months. And the reason that they had to find somewhere for the 2 girls to stay was because their mom was actually arrested for shoplifting. They didn't know what to do. So anyways, they sorted out with Gertrude that they'd pay her $20 weekly, which was about $165 now, which is a lot for 2 young girls, I think. Mm-hmm. They covered her rent, basically.
Oh, fuck, right, okay.
So anyways, they were grand there for most of July. They were fine. But then in kind of late July, August, rent started arriving late because, you know, obviously it was hard to make money working in a carnival.
Of course.
Gertrude wasn't happy with this and she started beating them. She had a paddle, like a big, you know, a flat kind of bat thing that she used to beat them with.
Okay.
One thing that she's quoted on saying is, "Well, I took care of you 2 little bitches for a week for nothing," after the rent was late and it actually arrived the next day after she'd like beaten them.
Excuse me now, Gertrude.
I'd beat her with the fucking rent money.
It obviously just didn't arrive that day, the day it was scheduled to arrive, and she just lost her fucking mind. Apparently, Sylvia and Paula didn't really get on. They did at the start, but then they started kind of arguing because I presume, you know, kind of, you know, the oldest girl, and then someone kind of comes in on your territory. She was a bit jealous and stuff.
Yeah.
Sylvia was really good looking and stuff, so I think it was just jealousy.
Fair.
So Paula started being a snitch. She said that they all went to a church supper, and she came home and told Gertrude that Sylvia and Jenny were being greedy and ate way too much, and they got beaten for that.
Yeah, sounds right.
What business is that of hers, can I ask?
Why does it fucking matter?
Like, let them get fat if they want to get fat, like, fuck off.
It does. I think it was just the whole, like, worried about what the neighbours think, you know, they're greedy bitches kind of thing.
Exactly. And if no one at the church was complaining, what have you got to do with it? Keep your mouth shut.
Yeah, exactly. Fuck what everybody else thinks. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, fuck Gertrude. She was real skinny as well.
Ugh.
Gertrude, like, she was real skinny, like, malnourished.
Well,
skinny.
That sounds like her problem.
Yeah.
It was just not okay. So as a response to them being hungry, she actually decided to deprive them of food even more. So they ended up actually going through bins and eating leftovers out of the bin to feed themselves.
Jesus.
Which obviously wasn't fucking ideal. That month then they started collecting cans, because apparently back then, I don't know if you can still do it now, you could sell Coke cans, like empty Coke cans, back to whoever, and they'd pay you for them. Probably not much, probably only a few cents, but it was loads of money back then.
Well, I mean, we do that here. Like, it's like 30 cent a can, or 25 cent, depending.
Oh, is it?
Oh.
Yeah, well, yep. They were doing that anyways, just to make a few quid for themselves. Sylvia one day bought a bag of sweets with the money she'd made, and she was accused of stealing them.
Oh, no.
Because, obviously... And then later on in the month, this is still in August, she told Paula and Gertrude that she'd actually had a boyfriend in Long Beach when her parents were on holidays there. She was like 15, 16, you know, just a normal little boyfriend.
Like, she was more than likely lying, because every little teenager you meet now is like, oh yeah, shifted this one, shifted this lad. Oh, you don't know him, it was on holiday.
My girlfriend. Oh yeah, we don't really talk anymore. We only talk when we're
Do you know what I mean?
Like, it was my cousin's friend. Swear to God, it was my cousin's friend.
She'd met him... in Long Beach the previous spring, like that spring. So like probably only a few months previous she'd met him. Gertrude wasn't happy with this, obviously, because she was fucking, you know, jealous and shit. So she asked her if she'd ever like done anything with the boy. And Sylvia didn't know what she meant. She was like,
"Oh,
well, like I went to the skate park with them and we went to the beach."
Aww.
You know, like she didn't know. She was kind of like...
Little petal.
Well, yeah, like we've gone places with them, if you know.
Like actually doing activities, not doing bits. Like
doing the last.
Yeah, she was, you know, especially back then, like kids were innocent, you know.
Not like us sick and twisted.
But she ended up admitting that she'd actually lied under blankets with him.
Oh,
I don't know if they were in a bed or wherever, but you know, probably just like they were cold and they got under the blanket.
Just like completely innocent.
It was definitely harmless.
Yeah, so sad already. I'm so worried.
And Gertrude was like, "Why did you do that, Sylvia?" she asked. And Sylvia was like, "I don't know." She didn't know. She was just like, "I just did," kind of thing. And then a few days later, Gertrude brought it back up, being the bitch she is, and was like, "Sylvia, you're certainly getting big in the stomach. It looks like you're going to have a baby." Right? Like, fuck off, right? So Sylvia thought she was messing and was like, "Yeah, sure, he's getting big. I'm going to have to go on a diet," right? Gertrude turned around and was like, told her and all the other girls in the house that if they did something with the boy, that they'd get pregnant. Like, that's all that could happen. Like, you know, your man and me.
You'll get pregnant from kissing.
This escalated, like, almost instantly. Sylvia was just sitting on a kitchen chair. Gertrude turned around and kicked her between the legs.
What?
Yeah. And Paula came over, knocked Sylvia off the chair and said, "You ain't fit to sit in a chair."
Sorry, wait, no, what? What?
So your answer to that is to kick her right up the fanny. I'm sorry.
Yeah, literally.
And like, contrary to popular belief, that doesn't just hurt men, that shit hurts us too. I'm just putting that out
Being
there.
Kicked anywhere hurts.
You feel that in your spine.
It goes the whole way up to your brain. It is a bad time.
So obviously Sylvia was like, "What the fuck?" And Jenny was like, Jenny obviously was the younger sister. She had a bad leg, so she wasn't really like fit to really do anything.
Yeah, so
you know, she was a kid. She was, I think she was only like, I don't want to say what age she was because I'm not even really sure. So later on in that month, August, still. So this is all escalated in the space of like 3 weeks. Like, it's fucking mental. Gertrude, Paula, and this lad from like the neighborhood, Randy Gordon Leper. Fucking Randy, right?
What a name.
Randy Gordon Leper.
Yeah, like bad name.
That's it. It doesn't sound like Randy is his first name. It's like a description. Like Randy Gordon the Leper. He got leprosy. He's a horny bastard. His name is Gordon.
Lynn's just fucking dangling off.
What a name. So, dear God, that is horrific.
Lad, I don't know how they knew him. I'd say they just knew him from around town. Like, Paula might have been seeing him or something. They force-fed Sylvia a hot dog with, like, a load of condiments on it. Like, ketchup, mustard, spices and all that shit. She ate it, got sick, and they made her eat the sick.
Oh, fuck me.
What?
Yeah, I don't fucking know. Like, scumbags. Anyway, so I think it was in September now, because I'm presuming school started back in September. They all went back to school, and Sylvia was actually accused of spreading rumours that Paula and Stephanie were prostitutes.
Can you blame her? I'm sorry, but like,
I would as well.
Some people think she did spread these rumours, but some people think she didn't, but everyone presumed that she did, you know.
As they
Stephanie
do.
Confronted her about this because a lad came up to her in school and was like, "Hehe, I have a bit of money for you," kind of thing, messing.
What you do for a fiver?
He was literally about to say the same.
And he told her that he had heard it off Sylvia. Sylvia was the one who had told him this, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Stephanie went home and punched Sylvia. Sylvia started crying, being like, "I'm sorry, whatever." And Stephanie got upset then, she was crying. Stephanie's boyfriend then, this guy called Coy Hubbard.
Also terrible name.
Yep, honestly.
Attacked her. Yeah, they all have bad names. He attacked her. Like, he just... beat the shit out of her.
Sick.
Gertrude beat her with a paddle then when he was done.
Wait, beat Stephanie or beat Sylvia?
Sylvia.
Oh, dear God. Okay.
Stephanie's boyfriend and Gertrude are both beaten up.
Dear God.
Right. So stuff kept escalating, blah, blah. Paul at one stage actually broke her wrist hitting Sylvia so hard.
Whoa.
Fucking hell. That's force.
Yeah. Like, she was hitting her around the head, around the face so hard that she broke her wrist. Like, yeah. That's a lot of fucking effort.
Yeah, and you gotta have rage behind you to do that.
It's like, not easy. Yeah. Wow.
And then when she came home from the hospital with a cast, she used that to hit her leg.
What the fuck?
I mean, props for ingenuity, but like, stop.
Yeah, honestly.
Like, you're going to hurt yourself more in the long run as well. And it just makes you more of a cunt.
Exactly.
Your bone just isn't going to heal properly. So now you have a gammy fucking wrist. Good job.
Honestly, hope she looked like a T-Rex forever.
Jenny obviously wasn't really doing anything. Jenny was like, she was getting hit every so often, but like Sylvia was really getting the brunt of it. I think it was because that she was like, you know, Jenny had like a bad leg and stuff. She wasn't like, I feel like Gertrude really saw Sylvia as a threat.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Right, okay.
I do think that's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Because she was young, she was pretty, she was confident. Like, she'd loads of friends when she was settled in a place. Like, her friends used to call her Cookie and stuff, which I thought was really cute.
Oh, we're not that nice to each other.
No.
Under threat of being beaten herself if she didn't comply, was forced to beat Sylvia by Gertrude.
Oh, fuck.
Which is fucking awful,
Jesus,
you know?
Jesus Christ.
And Sylvia knew that if she complained that Jenny would get beaten as well, so she just kind of took it because she was, you know, trying to protect her sister.
Of course, like.
She just kept escalating. Like, neighbourhood children used to come over and use her as a judo dummy. Like, throw her against walls, body slam her to the floor.
What?
All this shit. Like, used to cut her, like, slice her.
Whoa.
Burn her with cigarettes. She was burnt with cigarettes, like, at least 100 times.
What the fuck?
At one point, I fucking hate this part, she was forced to strip off by Gertrude in front of the neighbourhood children who had been beating her.
No.
And made put a Coke can.
Oh my God.
In herself. Yeah.
No. In front. No.
Yeah, an empty Coke bottle, not a Coke can, Jesus.
I mean, it doesn't make it better.
It doesn't, wait, like, it doesn't. But
they'd not have been like the glass ones then.
Yeah.
Oh.
No, like.
Like, this is all in the space of like 2 months, you know. This escalated so fucking fast. Like, she was there and she was happy. You know, she kind of fell out with the girls. This is what happened, like.
Yeah.
At one stage, she needed a gym suit for school. And Gertrude obviously was meant to buy that out of the money. That's what the money she was being given was for.
Yeah.
And she refused to buy it.
Shock.
So when Sylvia was still in school, obviously she was getting in trouble in school and she couldn't tell the teachers why. Yeah. She couldn't get one. So she stole one. I think it was like, it was in like Lost and Found or something.
Right.
Someone had lost it, but she brought it home and Gertrude knew she'd stolen it. Gertrude beat her with a police belt, like a thick police belt.
Ooh.
And burnt her fingertips with matches.
Oh, they're so sensitive, like.
So, yeah. And then Jenny obviously had like one good leg, one bad leg. And I feel like the bad leg was like smaller than her good leg.
Okay.
So her shoes wouldn't fit properly. So she was beaten with the same police belt when she stole like a single shoe from school. So she could, you know, that her shoes would fit.
So she could walk properly. Like.
This whole time, Sylvia's parents had been visiting and they said that, you know, they never noticed anything, everything looked fine, you know, that the girl seemed happy.
Yeah, right.
They didn't tell them. I don't know why they didn't tell them, but I suppose they were scared that.
Yeah, I'd imagine they would have been.
You know, they probably didn't want to worry their parents and, you know, they knew that their parents really couldn't do anything, that they didn't have money to help them.
Yeah,
you know,
they would have been afraid to speak out.
They were afraid, I presume, that they wouldn't take them, that they wouldn't believe them and they'd be left there.
Yeah, and as well, they might think it's going to get worse if they say anything in the first place.
So Gertrude, the massive fucking bitch that she is, after Elizabeth and Lester left for the final time, Gertrude turned to Sylvia and she was like, what are you going to do now that they're gone?
What?
So she knew what she was doing, obviously.
Yeah.
So this whole time, I think in like September, August, September, Jenny and Sylvia ran into their older sister Diana in the local park. I don't know, like, there's a few conflicting things that, like, she was adopted and told not to contact her biological family, but then there was another thing that she was married and she thought they were exaggerating, that they just wanted to get out of the house, that they wanted to be with their parents, that they weren't being, that they were making it up, basically.
Yeah.
As well, she apparently, when they did tell her, she thought that maybe it could be because they were meeting her, so she stopped meeting up with them as much because she was afraid that she was the reason that it was happening
really
to them.
Sad.
So, you know, the two girls told her, Diana, at one stage that they were hungry, so she gave Sylvia a sandwich, which obviously was found when she brought it home, and for that she was choked, beaten and put into a scalding hot bath. Which,
I mean,
I don't fucking know. Like, I don't even know the logic behind this, but anyways. A nurse actually went to the house to, like, investigate the story because an anonymous tip was called in when a neighbour heard screaming and the nurse didn't find anything. She said everything seemed fine.
How? Sure, if she's after been scalded with cigarettes and shit like that, obviously, like, that's going to leave
her. I don't fucking know. She must have had marks and bruises, like, she must have. I don't know how they didn't find anything.
They just never cared. They didn't care about kids back then. They, like, they didn't believe them.
No, they didn't.
No, there was no such thing even as child abuse. No. Child abuse wasn't a term that even existed.
was discipline as far as they were concerned.
It was putting manners on your kids, like.
Yeah. Exactly. So then it started escalating more. She was hit and kicked so many times, like, between her legs that she became incontinent.
God.
That she couldn't, like, control herself, that she was wetting herself because she had no control over her bladder, like. And they wouldn't let her use bathrooms.
Fuck.
But, of course, what else was she going to do?
Yeah.
Only wet herself. And they said that she was being dirty and they put her down into the basement. She was tied up downstairs on, like, a little mattress, naked, and they fed her and gave her water, like, never, basically. Gertrude used to tie her to a rail, like a suspended rail, just to torture her.
What a fucking sick bitch.
She was put into scalding hot baths and had salt rubbed into her burns.
Oh.
To be, like, cleansed for her sins, was a quote. This made me sick. John, the son she had with her first husband, he was 12 at this stage. He was encouraged to force feed Sylvia, his own, and Dennis, who Dennis was like a small baby. He was made feed Sylvia their shit, basically.
What?
Yeah, I don't know. The neighborhood children used to love coming over just to join in because they were like, you know, the judo punching bag in the basement.
Oh yeah, just something to do.
Just like a bit of crack. Do you know?
All those kids are serial killers now.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
100%.
Just saying.
In October 22nd, John, who was 12, gave Sylvia a bowl of soup with no, like, spoon or anything. And then when she struggled to eat it, he took it away. Despite her having no food pretty much ever, he just took it away. He gave it to her and he took it away. Anyways, I presume they thought she was kind of behaving herself better. And she was offered a bed upstairs if she managed to control herself, like, that she wouldn't wet herself. But the next day, October 23rd, Gertrude just, like, found out that Sylvia had wet herself and put her back down in the basement. She forced her to masturbate with an empty Coke bottle in front of other children.
Oh
my God. What the?
She forced her to strip off. And said to her, "You have branded my daughters, now I'm going to brand you." And by branded, she meant that she had accused the two girls of being prostitutes.
Yeah.
So like the scarlet letter kind of
you've
thing.
You've branded these two girls, as in you've called them prostitutes, now they're branded as prostitutes, mm-hmm. Now I'm going to brand you. She lit newspapers in the sink in the basement, heated up a sewing needle and scratched the words, "I am a prostitute and proud of it," into her stomach. Halfway through, she got tired because obviously she was so unwell that Richard Hobbs took over halfway, that he finished writing it. Then when she was down in the basement, Stephanie's boyfriend came back, tied her up and threw her against the wall.
Jesus Christ.
6 or 7 times. He wasn't sure how many times. The next day, Gertrude actually made Sylvia write a letter saying that she was running away and if anything happened to her, that a group of local boys had been bullying her and they were the ones who were to blame if she ever went missing. So, covering her fucking back.
This is some Carol Baskin shit.
Fucking fact.
It's fucking ridiculous. So, Gertrude then offered Sylvia crackers. Sylvia said she couldn't eat them because she was obviously so underfed that she probably couldn't even stomach anything.
Oh yeah, definitely. You
know? So, she beat her for that and went back upstairs. And Sylvia overheard her telling Jenny and John, you know, her sister and the 12-year-old boy, She overheard Gertrude telling them to bring Sylvia into the woods, blindfold her, and just leave her, let her go, just leave her to die. Obviously, she was like, fuck, I need to get out of here. So she tried to escape. Gertrude caught her, and, you know, she was tied up, given toast that she couldn't eat, and was force fed. And she was beaten with a broomstick then. And the next morning, she woke up and she couldn't speak or move or anything. She was just, obviously, I don't even know what word you could use for that, but, you know, she tried to escape again. I presume she just knew that it was, you know, getting to kind of the final stages that she needed to get out of there. She tried to escape, but collapsed on the stairs, and when Gertrude found her, she stood on her head for a few minutes.
Oh, what? Dear God.
So Stephanie came down, and Stephanie was kind of close with Sylvia the whole time, but obviously since this all happened, she obviously wasn't, but she'd been close with Sylvia at the start, like they got on, you know, they used to have sleepovers and stuff in Stephanie's bedroom and they liked each other, but then obviously this whole thing happened that,
yeah,
you know, Stephanie obviously couldn't really do anything about anything. So Stephanie kind of took pity on Sylvia and went down and wanted to give her a bath just to clean her up because she felt like, you know. But when she and Richard Hobbs went downstairs, because she needed Richard to help her move Sylvia into the bath, they found out that she wasn't breathing. So Stephanie called Gertrude and started giving her CPR. But when Gertrude came down, she said, "Don't bother, she's only faking it." You know, that she was just pretending, just she's looking for sympathy. Then on October 26th, Sylvia died as a result of malnutrition, shock, and a brain hemorrhage.
Oh.
Gertrude then made a neighborhood kid called the police, and when they arrived, she gave them the letter that Sylvia had written, saying that it was because of the neighborhood boys. Jenny pretty bravely went up to the police and said, "If you get me out of here, I'll tell you everything."
Good woman, Jenny.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they went to police. Everyone was arrested. Gertrude, Paula, Stephanie, John, Richard Hobbs and Coy Hubbard were arrested for the murder, and a group of the neighborhood kids who were involved were also arrested on injury to person charges.
Good little bastards.
Yeah. The autopsy found that she died as a result of a subdural hematoma, but shock heavily contributed to the whole situation. And obviously all those little injuries that she would have had, like, you know, the burns and everything, would of course all add up. Like the hot baths and everything, you know.
Yeah,
like,
there's only so much a person's system could take. Like, I'm surprised she survived as long as she did.
The salt is fucking disgusting. Like, how do you even think of doing these things?
And the salt, like, Like, I mean, oh.
Oh my God.
It's actually making me cringe.
In May 1966, Gertrude was convicted of first degree murder and sentenced to life in prison. Paula was convicted of second degree murder and was given life in prison. Richard Hobbs, Coy Hubbard and John were convicted of manslaughter and were given 2 to 21 years in a reformatory due to their age.
Oh, so like juvie?
Yeah. Basically.
Okay.
Not even juvie, more
is
like...
Is that not kind of what juvie is like? I don't know, like, I'm not American or that, but I feel like it's like kid jail, but it's like...
Kind of like a rehab kind of place? Like, rehabilitate them because... Yeah. Like a reformatory, like, kind of try
to... Yeah, it's like kid prison. It's where they try and fix them.
They get a lot of counselling and stuff.
I think so. I mean, I've never been myself, personally.
Yeah, that's just what
I
presume.
You always actually have thoughts of that when you're a kid. You're like, I'm going to go to kid jail if I don't stop misbehaving. Terrified.
All the time.
Did you? I was always like, they can't put me in jail because I'm a kid. In 1971, so 5 years later, Gertrude and Paula were given retrials. Paula took a guilty plea to a voluntary manslaughter charge, so she was released the following year. So she only did 5 or 6 years in jail, Paula.
Bollocks.
Gertrude lived for 14 more years as a model prisoner until she was granted parole and released on December 4th, 1985. Despite, like, there was so much public outcry, like, there's petitions, there was... People were fucking pissed.
Yeah. I'm pissed and I wasn't even there.
Yeah.
Honest to God. She took on a fake name, so she changed her name from Gertrude to Nadine Van Fossen. Van Fossen was like her first name.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Until she died in 1990, aged 61, of lung cancer.
Not satisfied with that.
Richard Coy and John, so the two boys who tortured her, one of them who used to use her as a judo dummy, and John who used to feed her literal shit, like, served 2 years and then were released on parole in 1968.
2 years.
Richard, at 21, died of cancer after only 4 years of being out of prison. Coy, who's the guy who was using her for judo practice, was in and out of prison for different charges. He murdered 2 men.
Not surprised.
And then died in 2007 at 56 of a heart attack. Paula actually tried to escape prison twice and failed.
Fuck's sake, Paula.
Come on, Paula.
Absolute notion.
She was granted parole in 1972. She married, had children. She got a job in a school as a counsellor.
What? Sorry,
she worked
what?
There. Yeah, swear to God. She worked there for a good while. Until they found out who she was and then fired
her.
Yeah,
rightly so. You don't get to counsel people when you tortured somebody.
She's
like,
a fucking counsellor and she tortured someone to death for 3 months.
And I'm sorry, but she didn't deserve to be married or have kids or any of that. Well, if you're that sick of a person, you don't deserve love.
No.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
No. What a story.
Imagine having the neck, though, to be like, do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to apply to be a counsellor.
Imagine.
Like, that's a different type of psycho.
Yeah.
Stephanie, who was like the second oldest daughter, she's the one who was kind of friends with Sylvia. She wasn't sentenced because she gave evidence against her family and everyone else involved. And after this whole thing, she ended up starting her own family. Which, to be fair, like, I know she did wrong, but she probably was forced into it. She didn't really want to be a part of it.
Like,
but
yeah,
at the same time, she should have helped as well. She was only, what, like, probably 14, 15.
Yeah.
Do you know? And obviously her mom was a scary bitch. So that's that.
Wow.
Yeah, it's intense. It's a lot, like, and I left out a lot of stuff. There was a lot of stuff that I remember reading when I read it originally, like, years ago, that I couldn't find online again.
That, like, well done, because that was really intense.
Just little things that they did to her that I just couldn't find any new confirmation on that I didn't want to put in case it wasn't true, you know?
Okay.
But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for the fact that that's all the stuff that can be verified, that's terrifying. Like, that's actually horrifying. I was just speechless for so much of that.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot to shut me up. So, like, that was, wow. That
it just,
was wow.
I remember reading it and I just couldn't believe, you know, like, something that went on for so long. And, like, one thing I remember reading was that neighbours actually called in and visited Gertrude in her kitchen. Noticed Sylvia looking a bit shit, that she wasn't eating with the others and all that kind of thing. And she just didn't say anything. That's it. I was just...
No, I'd well believe it. Even from, like, I didn't know anyone who went through anything like that, but I know people who had, like, not a good home life and stuff, and they would tell friends, they would tell neighbours of what was going on, like, that, you know, their dad was beating them, or their brother or uncle, whoever it was. They would tell the neighbours, they would tell the police, they would tell their school teachers, and they were just like, no, they're not. Stop telling lies. Like, it's not true. So nobody listened to kids. You could go there with, like, blood pouring out of your face, and they'd be like, no, you did that to yourself.
I feel like child abuse wasn't even coined as a term.
No. No, it's, you know, kids didn't matter. They were the property of their parents or whoever was in, they were in custody of. So I'm not surprised that nobody stepped in for her. Like, somebody should have.
It was just like a lot of the people who knew were kids, you know?
Yeah.
So a lot of those kids were involved and a lot of those kids thought it was fun.
Even that neighbour that rang the time they put her in the bath.
And the nurse thought she was, the nurse didn't find anything. I suppose.
Like, that neighbour would have heard another occasion.
I'm just thinking, is the fact that they had so many kids, like, Gertrude had 7 of her own plus Jenny and Sylvia, like, Sylvia might have just been left in a bedroom and told to stay there and be quiet. and the nurse mightn't have checked all the bedrooms to see who else is in this house, and there were so many kids.
Yeah, definitely.
That's true too. Yeah, I didn't think of that.
Do you know, it's not good enough.
I mean, my story is literally about somebody who's famous for torturing and mutilating people, and I'm not convinced mine is worse than yours at this point. So that's kind of really scary, and like none of mine can be confirmed, but yours can, and that makes it because if mine is sensationalised,
you can read the trial transcripts on, I found them on tapatalk.com.
Tapatalk.
Okay,
that's where I read them. I found like all the timeline stuff on like Wikipedia, and there's like sites dedicated to Sylvia that you can find that I found a lot of the details on, but I wanted to read the actual trial transcripts because I wanted to see what people said, you know, like I wanted like what the cops said. So I read through that. It took me ages to get through it. Like there's so much, and it's all dialogue as well. So, and for something to take that long to read, and it's just like this person said this and this person said that.
That is crazy. Yeah, that was quite a story. I mean,
I talked for way longer than I expected.
No, it was needed. Like that was a really, really good case. And fair play to be actually being able to stomach having to read trial transcripts for that shit.
Okay, yeah. So my story is about Countess Elizabeth Bathory. She was known as the Blood Countess, as Lady Dracula. She is cited to be the most prolific female serial killer. But the thing is, nobody can prove whether it's true or not. Mm-hmm. So I have kind of two sides of the story that I'm going to tell. The first one I'm going to go with is from a book I read called Bathory, Memoir of a Countess by A. Mardot. I hope I'm saying that right. If not, I'm sorry. I don't mean to offend. I'm not good at things. But yeah, it was a pretty interesting book, and I feel like it was accurate. And I did, obviously, I scrolled through the internet, like anything that mentioned her name, to try and check my sources and see how much of it I could confirm. And a good lot of it I could confirm was true. And there's a lot of names that pop up in the story that have been repeated. So like, they were definitely characters in her life in some way, shape or form. It just depends on who you listen to about what they were. So I originally heard about her, weirdly enough, in a movie called Stay Alive, which is about... Yep. Yep. Quiva, have you ever seen it?
Let me Wikipedia. What's it about? Well, no, don't tell me, because that's the point of the story.
Oh, no, I will go into it.
Tell me now in three sentences.
The thing is, Stay Alive is not accurate to her at all. I just heard her name. And basically, it's like a video game that's based on her, but the game happens in real life. So if you die in the game, you die for real. And it was such a cool movie.
I feel like I saw that.
So cool. I love it. It was one of my favorite movies when I was younger. So then I became obsessed with Elizabeth Bathory. And then I became obsessed with serial killers, pretty much. So yeah, she really kicked it off. And it's because of that movie. But it's horribly inaccurate to her life because they make her American. She wasn't. She was a Hungarian countess. So,
ugh, unreal. Bit of culture. Well,
yes. we'll get into her story, starting with the fanciful stuff from the book. The real thing is she was married off when she was 14 to Ferenc, I want to say Nadazdi, but I can't really pronounce the last name because I'm not Hungarian and I'm really sorry. So we're just going to call him Ferenc for the rest of the segment.
I'm going to agree.
And also her name is actually Erzsébet, which is the Hungarian pronunciation, but it's Elizabeth in English when you translate it back. And there's a few things like that, like their son Pal was Paul and so on and so forth. So yeah, there's a few bastardizations of the Hungarian names and places, and it's just because I'm not good at pronouncing things. So she was married off to Ferenc when she was 14. Now if we go by the book, she, when she was roughly 12, kind of rebelled against her parents because she didn't want to be married off to Ferenc. She was in love with a merchant's son. So she ran off to him, and they, you know, made the beast with two backs, and she got knocked up.
I wasn't expecting that. She was 12.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna spoiler alert, but she was a horny bitch. Like she'd be banging for this whole story, no matter what way you look at it.
I mean,
so, wow, that's a 12-year-old though.
Yeah.
Like that's...
Go ahead, girl. Like, yeah, not when you're 12.
She was 12.
Not when you're 12.
He was like
hormones then.
Like, I think 14, 15.
He was 15.
She got her monthly shame, as they call it in the book. So, you know, she's already...
Monthly shame.
Yeah. Shit's prepared. So, hence how she got pregnant. Yeah, so apparently she got knocked up and she was pregnant. Her mother was disgusted. She was bringing shame to the family. So basically she shipped her off to live with Ferenc's mother, Arsolia, while Ferenc was off at war. So Ferenc didn't even know that Erzsébet was in the castle at the time.
Oh my God.
So he didn't know about the pregnancy. Like, it was all kept secret from him to save her shame and her honor.
So he just had a wife at home that he didn't even know he had.
They weren't married yet. Like, like they were engaged to each other. Like it was very common at the time.
Betrothed.
Yeah, exactly. It was really common for them to be paired off for prosperity when they were like 12 or so. That's when the engagement was due to happen. Like the promise was made. So they didn't get married until she was 14, he was 19, which is not okay in this day and age, but it was totally fine back then. So she went off, she had the kid was shipped off, she wasn't allowed to keep her. So that happened, and apparently the daughter was sent to live back with her father, so that went down. And while she was living there, she saw a painting of Ference, and she just got absolutely obsessed with him, like he was supposed to be just beautiful, the strong, strapping war man that like she was just overly obsessed with. So she forgot all about Daniel, the little merchant son that she had the kid with.
Shit crack for Daniel,
honestly. Gold digger. Poor Daniel. All of our sympathies to you. So he came back from war, they got married, everything was fine. He was okay with the fact that she wasn't a virgin after they had their, you know, their wedding night, because her family was worth so much more money than Ference's. He took her last name, so he became Ference Bathory.
Okay.
Yep. So I think that should definitely be a thing in this day and age. Like, you know, if you're more special than your husband, he got to take your last name.
In full support. Yeah.
So that's just, you know, the background on her. But then things start getting weird.
Ooh, love a bit of weird.
From all accounts and purposes, her father and mother were also very cruel. Like they would torture people openly in court as punishment for their crimes. They would boil
hot
them
oil.
There was part of the story where someone was castrated.
Ew.
In front of the entire court. Then he was brought off to the hospital, like the infirmary, to make sure that he survived so that they could cook his testicles and feed them to him later on.
That literally sounds like something like that was in, that was in Game of Thrones. Poor fucking Theon.
Yeah, no, that was a Game of Thrones. Well, I mean, technically he didn't actually eat it because he just made a sausage and he was like, oh you thought this was it. So they force fed him his own testicles, and he apparently got sick obviously from eating that, and because he was strapped to the bed they left him to asphyxiate on his own vomit and died. So they had very creative ways of killing people. And there was one little girl, like the reason this is happening, again I can't confirm it because I don't think this part is true, but the reason it's supposed to have happened is because her sisters were raped and murdered by the peasantry as part of a revolt against the Bathory family. So then her father took all of the people he thought were responsible. One of them that was supposed to have raped his daughter, he raped their daughter in front of them and then sent her off to be boiled in oil. And apparently Elizabeth thought her hair was so beautiful she wanted it for herself, so she asked for her head to be shaved so she could keep the hair. And this is when she was like really young, like 10 or 11.
What the fuck?
She basically had she had beginnings in torture and stuff like that that really kind of set her off.
So what did she say? Just bring me that scalp.
Well, more of like pretty much kinder anyways. Will you just bring her scalp?
Yeah, want to throw it on like a new hat?
Bring me home a scalp there, Dad.
I don't think the scalp was involved. I think she just took the hair. She probably got it turned into
never know.
A
she
wig.
Might have been a sick bitch.
That was definitely a shitty wig though. Like, how long the fuck ago did this happen?
Oh, I should have mentioned that. This story happens, I mean, the main bulk of it is between 1590 and 1610. So it's really old.
What, like 500 fucking years ago in Hungary, they were going to make good wigs?
I mean, listen, I wasn't there.
I mean, come on, like, girl. They probably knitted that shit together.
I mean,
that definitely
looked
bad.
There was no IKEA back then, so I feel like everything had to be handcrafted or made well. So.
Oh, no. They weren't able to make good wigs, Savannah. What, like a lace front?
If you're disturbed by that, you're going to have a struggle with the rest of this story.
I just can't get past the whole, like, shave her head and make a nice wig, and then it's going to be a shit wig anyways.
Yeah,
I don't know why I'm getting so head up about
probably.
This.
You were really focusing on the
it's
wrong
just,
part.
It just doesn't make sense. But anyways, okay.
So then, you know, she's married to Ference. It's all G. They love each other, like they're completely obsessed with each other, because Elizabeth was supposed to be just beautiful, like absolutely stunning, and she had like fiery red hair and she always wore like beautiful bedazzled emerald green dresses, and you know, she had a supple bosom and all of those nice old timey things that they wanted in a
probably
woman.
Ugly.
Yeah,
weren't people back then ugly, weren't they?
I mean, I wasn't,
I mean,
there
probably
apparently
isn't
so
isn't that
but
a thing that you get more that like people get more attractive over time? Humans now are more attractive than they used
okay,
to be.
Okay, fine, for the standards of 1590 she was stunning.
Oh no, I know she was, but I'm just saying that she definitely was ugly.
Like, she didn't
like,
have any carbuncles or shit
like imagine
that.
Us back then, like Cleopatra apparently was kind of ugly.
Yeah,
too.
Well, I mean, I'm ugly now, so I don't want to think of me back in 1590.
Yeah, I'm not trying to comment
if I could
on anybody's
transport
looks
myself
because I'm not
to back then, I bet, I swear to God, I bet we would have been like slaying the 1500s.
So Ferenc, obviously, he's a big warlord. He's a tough dude. You don't fuck with him, you don't fuck with his wife. So if any of the like maids or the servant boys or any of them would get out of line, Ferenc would beat them and torture them and whatever the fuck he wanted to do. Like, a lot of his torture also involved rape. And just, I'm just going to put out the PSA now. This story mentions rape an awful lot, like a lot of this. Like, it gets pretty heavy. So
of course it was tough.
Yeah, there was one point where he caught a maid stealing from them, I do believe it was. Elizabeth came over as he was like beating her in the face and stuff like that, and he asked her if she wanted to join in on the torture, and she agreed, of course. And they strapped her to the bed and they heated a poker, they called it an iron, but I'm pretty sure it was like an iron poker. They had her clothes stripped off by other servants, and they strapped her to the bed with her legs wide open.
No!
Yeah. They inserted the hot poker into places it shall not mention.
Oh my god.
So, so over time she really just started to take pleasure in torturing the maids and the servants for whatever it was that they did wrong. And she would frequently join Ferenc in sexually abusing them. Mm. And like he would, you know, have his way with one end of them, and then she would like sit on their face and stuff.
That is so
that's not
disgusting.
A time to talk to you.
They were the worst power couple you could probably ever think of.
That's actually, every sentence you say is just worse than the one before.
So she did have one chambermaid that she liked, but she's the only one that ever really got away with anything because she respected her, and her name was Darvulia. And Darvulia was considered to be a witch. She practiced pagan rituals, Satanism, and during her time in that castle she found books, Elizabeth found books about like anatomy and all of that kind of stuff that, you know, you weren't really meant to do because it was against the church back then. So she started to really get interested in dark things and like astronomy. Obviously that's not dark now, but back then it was basically witchcraft. So then when Darvulia came along, she invited her to come along to a pagan ritual with her, where she met another witch who was named Dorota. So they kind of became her main people. Dorota didn't come to join the castle for a while, but then she kind of became one of her main chambermaids as well. And while they were at the pagan festival, Darvulia made a potion because there was this one particular girl, I think her name was Sarah, that they didn't like. And she was like, oh, well, what will this do to her? Like, well, we'll do this ritual. We'll, you know, create the spell and all of that stuff, and when we get back she's going to be dead. So they went to their pagan ritual. They had this weird chanty mass with all the candles and like pretty much everything you can imagine. Some were in robes but others were naked. And one of the evenings, once they were done with like their festivities or whatever, they just had a big old gangbang. Like, there was just a huge orgy. They were all drunk on wine,
having a gangbang, having
a
ball.
Are they outside? Like, is Hungary not really cold?
Yeah, they're outside. It was during summer, so it's really hot.
Yeah, doubt they're getting their kit off in like minus 20 degrees.
It's not just permanently cold.
I was like, Hungary gets really cold.
Their nips would cook glass. Like, could you imagine? No.
Oh, yeah, honestly, no. But there is a part in winter that is coming up, and it's a real bet. So just stick with me. It gets worse.
Oh, great.
So basically, when they got back, her and Darvulia started having an affair. There was wonderful handcrafted Italian dildos brought into the mix. So they had their fun with that.
Might as well have fun with
it. So is she having like an affair with woman?
Yeah.
While she's married to your man, and does he know?
So like they had a conversation about it a bit after her affair with Darvulia, but she knows that while Ferenc is at war, because it's the Ottoman war with Hungary and the Turks, so real thing, this all genuinely happened. So while he was off at work, I guess, at war,
at the office,
he was off at work, you know.
Yeah, she was doing her bits with Darvulia, but like she knew that he was getting just a whole bunch of prostitutes or like
raping a bunch,
you know.
Yeah, so she was
spoils
like,
of war, which was often
that's
women
fucking gross.
Yeah, so that kind of shit was going on. The thing about it that I think kind of caused her to be as psychotic as she is she had epilepsy, which they called the falling sickness back then. And one of the cures, what they thought was a cure for it, was blood of a non-sufferer. And they would either dab it on the lips of the victim, as in the victim of epilepsy, or to be drank from a piece of skull.
I mean.
Oh, so you either put it on like lipstick or drink it out of someone's fucking skull.
Yeah, so that's...
So you use a skull as a cup to drink blood, or you put it on your mouth.
Because I had to look that up as like the old-timey treatments for epilepsy, the falling sickness. And that is legit what they thought would treat it, was if they drank the blood of a non-sufferer.
That definitely just didn't
work. Of course
not.
More
of everything that would work.
After like, I'd say about a month, you're like, oh shite, lads, maybe this doesn't work.
I mean,
something.
Again, this is the time where they were like, oh, you've got the plague? Well, we got to do leeches about it.
Well, leeches they still kind of do to cleanse blood and stuff. And like, I can see
so
the logic there, but I can't see how you...
It's like a blood transfusion because they thought it was a blood sickness.
I'm so glad I wasn't born back then. Imagine
that. Oh, I'd be dead.
It's a real bad time.
Vita definitely would have been classed as witches.
Oh, they would have thought we were witches or some shit, like we were not living.
Oh, 100%. So, yeah, one of the times she was really lonely, I guess. She was missing Ferenc while he was at war, because he'd go for like a year, 2 years, 3 years, like 5 years, depending on how long the king needed him. While he was missing, at war, away from the castle. This is kind of a really weird thing, but it's sort of mentioned in the movie and it's mentioned in the book. So Darvulia made her like a herb potion that she had to drink. I'm just going to straight out call it shrooms or some sort of psychedelic. Okay. Because she 100% took drugs. But yeah, apparently it made her like astral project out of her body.
She had trained.
And into Ferenc's camp. And he was with a prostitute at the time, but like you could tell he wasn't enjoying it. And I'm like, sure, Jen. And she like entered the body of the prostitute and he recognized immediately that it was his wife and like started speaking to her.
I'm
and
sure
stuff.
That happened.
Like...
So. You know, sure. So yeah, we have the epilepsy and we have the fact that she 100% was doing shrooms.
Without
she was tripping balls.
And then
like.
Factor number three into why she was crazy, her parents were cousins.
Who does love a good bit of incest?
Oh, incest is best.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Incest is best, keeping the family.
Were they like second, what kind of cousins were they, does it say?
It doesn't say. I could never find like what breed of cousins they were, but like they were cousins. I'm sure their parents were probably cousins. Like
weak chins all around.
Oh yeah, because they were like well off, weren't they? If they had a castle and shit, they were probably like royalty-ish.
Yeah, no, they were. So... Like they were proper nobility. Like again, she was a countess. So yeah, I have so much about this because there's so much. But she had a miscarriage, but there's a lot of debate about how many children she lost and what actually happened. So if we go back to the movie, which I should mention is Bathory Countess of Blood. Again, I'm going to butcher this name because it's very difficult to pronounce, but my best guess is that it's Juraj Jakubisko. I hope that's right. But that's the director of the movie. And again, it's a really interesting movie, but there's a lot more inaccuracies in it because they're trying to be entertaining while also telling what might be the true story of the Countess.
Hollywood.
So in that movie, she miscarries her son because Ferenc comes back full of rage from war because they weren't really doing well against the Turks.
Trauma.
And he's drunk and he basically, while she's pregnant, rapes her. And the force of that made her lose the baby.
I hope that's not the truth.
Whereas
Foxy.
So there is someone in their life that is called Miklos, but there's a lot of debate about who Miklos was. It could have been, I think one source says that it was an uncle, another says it was a cousin, another says it was this baby that she miscarried. And then in the book, she actually lost twins, a son and a daughter.
Oh,
and she lost them because she had an epileptic fit and fell into a coma for 3 days. So from what I can gather, she definitely miscarried a child at some point. But again, there's no way of knowing why, because it was 15, 90, whatever. The only people that know the true story are dead and gone now.
Yeah.
So she lost that baby. And then her father died. Her mother died. Her uncle died. Ferenc's mother died because of an abscess in her tooth.
Oh, rot jaw.
Ew, what rot jaw?
Because she refused to have
Adam pay attention.
Yes. Yep. Shout out to my brother who's afraid of going to the dentist.
What's rot jaw?
It's where your jaw rots because you have so much
rots and you die.
Yeah, and depending on where you have it, like if you could rot your lower jaw or it could rot
into your brain.
It could rot all the way up and into your brain.
Ew.
So, and again, she wasn't able to eat. She was covered in sores and like blisters.
You should just pull it out like an almond person.
Horrible.
It hurts anyways.
You can't pull a tooth that has an abscess, Quiva. You will die.
You can't have a dentist.
And again, 1590.
Yeah, but they used to. That's what they used to do. Was just pull teeth out. People used to just have no teeth then.
There was
one
guy.
She probably wanted some like pearly white.
I don't know where he was from. I heard a story that a guy used to just keep pulling teeth until he got the right one.
Oh, Jesus Christ. If I continue, you would have heard me say she wouldn't let the doctor come. She was having none of it because Elizabeth's doctor was a pagan guy as well. So she was like, no, it's not my God. Yeah. So basically she done died. It was her own fault. And she didn't sound like the nicest person anyway. So she had all these deaths happen and she started to fear for her own mortality and start get really paranoid about aging because she was already in her 20s and that was just so old back then. So yeah, she was freaking the bean. Basically, she started to hate her young maids for their beauty. So she got them all sheared.
Oh my God.
So that like got all of their hair cut off and she'd make them walk around naked to humiliate them. And if any of them stepped out of line at all, that was it. They were done. They were done for. One of her maids, while she was dressing her, she noticed that the neck ruffle that she had that was supposed to have been starched and ironed and, you know, made stand up like they did.
Yeah.
she had burnt it with the iron. Oh. And the maid said, oh, it's okay, my lady, we'll just turn it this way and hopefully we can hide it. And this was the absolute worst thing she could have done, oh, because it made her think she was being insolent and disobedient and sloppy. So she took the hot iron that she had brought for ironing the neck collar and she beat her with it to death.
Fuck.
Jesus.
And scalded her.
My God.
Yeah, real bad. So stuff like that. Like she did that to a lot of them. Then one time Ference came home from war and he told her about a torture device that he'd made for the prisoners of war that they captured, which was a hanging cage that had razor blades lining all of the bars on the inside. So they had no choice but to either stand perfectly still in the middle, which nobody can do, or they would fall into it and their skin would literally be sliced to ribbons. And this basically made the bitch horny. She was like, hell yes, I want one of these. Build it for me now. And he was like, yep, no problem. You can have a torture machine. So they built her one and they put it down in the dungeon, which is where they tortured them normally. And I think if you look online on Google, you can find some sort of pictures of her dungeon where they did the torturing. And it's sort of like, you know, the shears and stuff that she famously used. But I can't find any proof she actually used shears, because who knows? There's a couple of pictures like that, but I don't know if they're, you know, from the time or they're just sort of a, here's what we think happened. Worth looking at. Not quite sure how accurate it is. But yeah, so she got that. And then one day she was, you know, she went to check in on her people because she had like a whole bunch of castles, a whole bunch of land. She was like collecting rents from the villages. Like she had a lot of power. She was almost more powerful than the king in Hungary. Holy like she shit. Had a third of the land Jesus. In Hungary. She owned most of it. So she was checking in on her peasants just to see how they're getting on. And she tried to keep like a good reputation with them so that when it came time to collect taxes, they wouldn't like
kick a
throw
fit
and try and revolt. So she was coming back from that journey one of the days and she came across a woman on the side of the road who normally it wouldn't bother her, but she noticed it wasn't like a normal like lorry peasant woman. It was a middle class kind of woman. So she stopped and she went to speak to her and basically she found out that her husband had left her for a younger model, as men do, and thrown her out of the house and disgraced her, and like none of her neighbors would speak to her because she'd been left by her husband and now she was a disgraced woman. So this just completely enraged Elizabeth because she was already freaking out about her own age and she just started imagining like Ference throwing her out of her castle and taking all of her possessions and giving them to the new wife like her husband had done and stuff like that. So she got real pissed basically, and she took the woman and brought her back to her castle. She gave her some of her dresses, like was real nice to her. Then she kidnapped the younger woman that the woman's husband had left her for and put her into the torture box, which she actually have it here. She called it the hanging cage. So not too creative.
Definitely.
Because it was a cage.
She could have done better.
But she had a guy that like looked after her horses and stuff. His name was Fico. He was an ugly hunchback apparently. And Fico was definitely involved because he's mentioned a lot in whatever you look up about her. Fico helped her to put these people into the hanging cage and basically they lowered it down. They knocked her out. They kidnapped her and then they took her to the castle and they lowered down the cage and they put her into it and then they waited for her to wake up. And when she woke up, they started like burning her feet with hot pokers and making her fall into the
the
razor blades on the side. And then apparently Elizabeth caught her by the hair and started swinging out of it like Miley Cyrus in Wrecking Ball, like just absolutely bouncing around the place out of her head.
That would make mince meat of her, like in general, like she's gonna be caught up.
Yeah.
Ew.
So then she started like shaking the sides of the cages so that she just fucking bounced around it like a ping pong ball. And it literally in the book it's described as she was sliced to ribbons.
Aww.
And her blood just started like pouring out of the cage. So Elizabeth tore off her gown and stood under it and showered in her blood and just left it pour all over her. And Dervulia came in and was like, yo, what the fuck? Let's go get you a bath because this isn't good. And she took her off and like washed her up and stuff. But when she was done, Elizabeth was looking in the mirror and she was like, no, like this definitely did something for my skin. I look younger. Like my skin absorbed her beauty.
Didn't Elizabeth?
She was just looking for any excuse.
Yeah. So she was convinced that blood had like anti-aging properties, healing properties, like all of this stuff. So she requested an alchemist to come and make her a potion to keep her young. And he made her a bunch of things which definitely escalated her madness. And here's why. One of them was a poultice for her skin. So like a moisturizer, a body moisturizer that had lead.
Herbs, egg whites and vinegar. That's unreal.
Good old lead.
Good old lead. You know, the thing that made Van Gogh cut his ear off.
Is that what it was?
And then, yeah, he used to eat, it's really sad actually. He used to eat yellow paint. And obviously, you know, paint had lead in it back in the day. But he used to eat yellow paint because he was depressed paint. And he thought the yellow paint would make him happy.
Oh bless him.
Yeah, Van Gogh's story is so sad. Yeah, so that's kind of what drove him nuts in the end.
Okay.
Anyway, so yeah, Point is, lead not good. He made her a facial peel from mercury, and it says alum, so I'm going to assume like some sort of aluminum or aluminium in our language.
But mercury again.
For the cyanide.
Mercury again, yeah, not good.
Like, just the best.
Honey and eggshells. So yeah, literally I have written here like mercury and lead with a pre-existing cruelty, health conditions and a fear of growing old. Not a good combination.
Not a good mix.
Like, none of this shit was adding up to make this woman sane. Like, it was never going to work out for her. So it basically, she didn't like it. She said it didn't really do anything. It wasn't working after like a couple of months of trying it out. So she asked again about the properties of blood because, like I said, she had read before that it was helpful, that it would heal, and she had poured somebody else's blood all over her already and thought, hey, this is a great thing. So he was like, yeah, like it might work, but it would have to be the blood of a young beautiful virgin mixed with something to stop the blood from coagulating, so like an anticoagulant. He also recommended regular dick basically as a way to stay young. So he was like, satisfy your carnal urges frequently. It's like, pretty sure that doesn't work either, but okay. So at that point, he made her the blood potion and she used that for a while and she was like, this is fantastic, was convinced it was working. She looked younger than ever. And then Dorota came and joined them in the castle at this point. So when Dorota came, Elizabeth asked her to kind of recreate the potion for her so that she could have it in constant supply and not have to wait for the alchemist to come. And she was like, oh yeah, I can tell already what this is. Like, it's this, this and this and blood. She was like, he's not using the right kind of blood. You're using servant blood, aren't you? Because they would take whatever servant acted up and bring them into the torture room and torture them and drain them and use that blood for her potions, for her skin.
I mean, so, if they're not doing well, just give them the fucking fat.
Yeah, that's not how things worked, apparently. So, yep. So she was like, yeah, you're not doing it good enough. Like, you need blue blood. You need the blood of a noble girl.
Oh, God's sake.
Yeah. So then they started to kidnap, like, not nobility, but like middle class nobility. So like not up on her rank, but still above peasant level. And they started to kidnap those girls. So she started a reforming school.
Yeah.
Like, basically to teach young girls how to run a castle, like how to have etiquette and stuff. Yeah, that kind of thing. So she started that and obviously it was doing really well. So they sent a whole bunch of noble girls directly to her. Mm. And every so often she would just kind of take one. They only really mention like the first one that she takes, but she basically fell in love with her, but hated her at the same time because of her beauty. So she was like turned on and just fully hated her at the same time. So she was like, okay, I have one last thing to teach you. And she was like, you're going to need to know how to please a man. And she basically just, you know, all sorts of sexually abused the girl, and the girl was trying to fight back and she started to bite her and like take chunks out of her. And the whole time she just thought it was like hilarious that she was doing it. And then they took her off, tortured her and killed her. The same routine as it has been. So yeah, that's like, it's the only one they really mention, but you can imagine she probably did the same to any noble girl she took. And when her family came to like collect her, they were like, yo, where's our kid? You know, we sent her here to go get schooled. And she was like, oh, she left like last week. Was it not E that took her? And they were like, no, like she's still here.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh no, she left with some boy. Cannot for the life of me remember. I think it may have been Stefan or something like that. The name she mentioned, she must have gotten from the girl about a boy that she liked, because the family recognized it and they were like, fuck, they're after running away together to be married because she was supposed to be married to somebody else and, you know, he was below her class kind of thing. So they believed her, basically, that she was gone with this boy. So no one really questioned these girls going missing for a while. Then she went to Vienna to visit the king, and the king had been taken over by his brother at the time, but his brother owed Ference a debt. And now Ference had died in the meantime. Like, after he died, she kind of went into a bit of a depression and went a bit worse. But around this time is when Ference died. So it was just about after his funeral that she went to Vienna to see the king. There was this singer there that she just had like the voice of an angel, and she became obsessed with her. So this girl was like 14. Like, she was really young. And she requested her to come to her castle in the winter and stay with her for a while and be her evening entertainment. And of course the girl came. You're not going to turn down a gig like that, you know. Mm-hmm. Big old countess wants to hear you sing, you're going to go. So she went and she stayed for a while and all was good. And eventually Elizabeth started getting her to come and sing her to sleep.
Oh, great. Buckle up, Quiva.
Yeah. It gets worse.
It would not help me sleep at all.
This is, like, I think this is, I don't know. They're really bad. Like, all of them are really bad, but this is the worst murder, I think, of the whole story that I read. So she got into the bed with her, the girl, because she was getting tired herself from being singing all day and standing up and whatever. So she lay down on the bed with her while she was singing and she fell asleep. Elizabeth just kept looking at her, and like she described her cheeks as looking like apples, and that she just wanted to take a bite out of them because they were so perfect.
Oh no.
So she started touching her while she was asleep and just kind of exploring her body, is the best way I can put it. And basically she went down south and started doing her thing. And obviously the girl was still asleep all this time. So that's called somnophilia. That's not okay. So the girl eventually woke up because Elizabeth started to bite and chew.
Stop.
On the nether regions.
Oh, I thought you were going to see her face. That's so much worse. Yeah.
No. She was chewing the lady bits up and she was like screaming like, what the fuck are you doing? I was going to say
lips, but wrong one. And
oh my God, like...
Yeah, that is not the kind of lip you want bitten, I'm just saying. so she starts chewing up her lady bits and then she moves up her thighs and starts biting her breasts. And then she literally takes a chunk out of her
cheek. This girl is awake this whole time now.
She'd be getting a swift. She's awake this whole time.
And why is she still there?
Because she was pinned down. She was trapped there. Like, she was 14 and at this point Elizabeth is like 30 odd.
Oh, okay.
Actually older. She'd be in her 40s. Yeah, she would have been in her late 40s.
So she was ancient, basically, according to them.
Ancient according to the times, yeah. But she still looked like perfectly young and beautiful. Like, by all accounts, this woman didn't age the way she should have. So that's why it's so believable that she was like a vampire and stealing the essence of young people and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So because the girl obviously wasn't having any of it, she was like, you're going to be my songbird kept forever in a crystalline cage.
Ew.
And she had her brought outside. Like, she was unconscious at this point from the shock. She had her brought outside and partially buried in the snow so that she was standing up. Then she poured water over her, buckets and buckets of water repeated until she was frozen alive in place.
What the fuck?
Then she went up to her room and sat by the comfort of her fire looking out at her newest statue.
That is grim. That is,
yep. Like, it's real bad. It's really, really bad.
That's like the worst thing I've ever... Like, imagine how cold... You would be.
Like,
I can't even get into the... It takes me an hour to get into the pool on holidays. I don't do all the cold water. Like, that would not suit me.
Imagine being... Like, and it would have been, like, minus 20? Minus, like, more? Like, Hungary gets ridiculously cold in the winter. And that's now with global warming. So, I can only imagine what it was like back then. Like, horrific. Absolutely horrific.
I just checked there and it can go to minus 10.
That's currently, yeah. So... Back then it was colder.
It was, yeah.
Probably like minus 20.
Yeah. So, yeah, holy that shit. Happened. That was horrific. And then eventually, like, she had the body taken away the following day and got Fico to bring it into the woods so that the wolves could do away with the rest of it. So that they could just say, like, oh, sure, she went for a walk and the wolves got her.
Like, that's a regular occurrence.
If they were ever questioned. Because, like...
Just none of this seems to have a point. It's like, why are you... Like, she doesn't seem to have, like, a good point with anything. Like, she's I love this one...
She and kills I want, for you that know. Purpose. Like, it's because she loves and hates them because they're young, they're beautiful, and like she's besotted with them, but she hates them for being young and beautiful.
She reminds me of, you know, those people who stalk celebrities.
Yeah. Yeah, it's exactly that. It's what I can only imagine it is like, you know, that thing where you see it like an animal and it's so cute, you just want to squeeze it to death. Because our brains can't process that emotion. We don't know how else to deal with it, so we kill it so it stops being
cute.
That's
so fucking twisted.
Like, obviously, none of us have actually killed an animal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's apparently the psychology behind
it. It's the same concept, like.
So I think it's like that, except, you know, inbred, epileptic.
Shrooms.
Crazy. Full of torture. And her aunt Clara was also, she was bisexual and she was a sadomasochist as well. So she learned a lot of this stuff from her. She would do the same kind of thing.
Probably at a really young age as well.
So she had a mentor, like.
Yeah, she had a mentor. Like, it seems to run in the
tips
family.
Tips and tricks from your aunt.
It definitely seems to run in the family. Yeah, so then we get more stuff that kind of sets her off the edge and she starts just kind of killing all around her. And basically... Darvulia died of syphilis.
As was the way.
So, you know, that was her bae. And her bae is now dead. She still had Dorota, but, you know, Darvulia was the main one. She was the first. And they were having sexy times because she didn't fancy Dorota because apparently Dorota was fat and hairy.
Oh, poor Dorota.
Honestly, poor Dorota. Like.
Dying of syphilis as well is bad. Like, have you ever looked
at
it?
Yeah, because develop into neurosyphilis or something like that syphilis. As well. Something mental.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it rotted her flesh. Like, she had chunks missing out of her face, her mouth. Like, she couldn't eat because her tongue was full of blisters. Like, it is completely described in the book. Things have been grim enough so far in the story, and I didn't feel the need to go into that. But we'll just say she died of syphilis. And I literally have a note written here It's like, that's why herbs aren't better than condoms. So, you know.
Wrap up kids.
Don't be silly, wrap your willy. Just putting it out there. Oh yeah, she had kids in the meantime. It's like, this is just so irrelevant to the story that I just didn't even think to mention that, yeah, she had three kids in the meantime.
Oh, they're unimportant.
Two daughters and a son. But they're just so unimportant. So her daughter Anna miscarried her grandchild and her husband started to spread rumours that Elizabeth was a witch and that she was, you know, killing all these noble women and stuff like that. But if she was doing it, there weren't really rumours, were they? So, yeah, so things started to go south right about here. So then we have the guy that I absolutely hate in the movie. I hate his face. I hate his name. I hate everything about him. And, like, I'll get into the movie version of him, like, briefly. Like, I'll really briefly talk about the movie part because it's just the what we think really happened.
Oh, okay.
But this is pretty much the end now. But yeah, so Thorzo was her cousin and he was the Palatine of Hungary. So he was, like, what would that be? Like, the Prime Minister, I guess? Maybe something along that line of power. So he came to her castle and he was asking about the missing noble girls and, like, kind of questioning her a little bit. And he was like, okay, like, I'll be back in a couple of weeks. And then her daughter, Anna, came to visit her and she said she overheard a conversation between her husband and Thorzo saying that they were planning an investigation into her because the king didn't want to repay his debt to her. So they had talked about this when she went to get the young singer girl and stuff. She was like, hey, you ever going to repay that debt you owed my husband? Because he's dead now and I kind of need the money. So again, the book doesn't mention it, the movie doesn't mention it, but if you look up like her Wikipedia or anything like that, it'll say she started to get real strapped for cash towards the end because her respect was going, like the church was kind of against her, the king was spreading these rumors about her and stuff, so she really needed that money back. And because she was a woman at the end of the day, she was still a woman and women didn't carry the same respect, countess or not. So because her husband was dead, she kind of lost her standing in society a little bit. So the king didn't want to repay his debt, or probably couldn't, because by all accounts this guy had gold everything, like gold floors, gold plates, gold walls, gold outfits, like he was fucking crazy. So if Thurzo got her arrested, then it would clear his debt and he would also be able to claim some of her assets. So he'd be able to take like castles and lands and stuff like that from her. So it was like a win-win for him. So they were like conspiring between the king and his husband and Thurzo. They were all conspiring to get Elizabeth arrested. So Thurzo came back and the only things they could really find in the dungeon were soiled garments of the girls and like a lot of blood. Like there was a lot of blood. And then he found a book with a list of names because she had kept a list of names of her torture victims and murder victims, but she only kept like their name and like kind of what she thought about them. She never kept like their status or where they came from or anything that. So he seized the book as well and placed her under house arrest, and she was kind of like, well, everyone tortures their slaves, like it's not just me, so it's not that special. But eventually he came back and he was like, okay, cool, yeah, here's a letter and this is all the crimes you're accused of. And there was, again, there's some debate. It starts with 30 and it ends at 600 as the number of victims that she tortured and killed. Just no way of knowing.
She's been busy.
But in the book, it settles on 100. So still a very high number of people.
Fair,
so this all goes down in 1610 is when she was arrested. I think it was December 1610. She wasn't given a trial because he basically talked the king out of giving her a trial, because if she was put on trial, she would have had to have been either beheaded or burnt at the stake as a witch. So all of her her chambermaids and everything, like Dorota, and there was another one she liked called Caitlin, anyone who was close to her, Fico as well, was taken, and they were all put on trial, as in they were tortured into saying what they needed them to say. And then Dorota and Caitlin were burnt at the stake and Fico was beheaded. So anyone that had anything to do with her, before they could even have like a proper inquiry, they took the evidence from them and just killed them straight
And out. As well, if that's being tortured out of them, that's oh, well, we think this has happened, so we're just going to torture you until you say what we want you to say.
Exactly that. So that went down, and that's pretty much the end for Elizabeth. Like, she had lost everything. Like, she'd lost her name, she'd lost her wealth. She was bricked into her bedroom with just a small slot left for where they could hand her food. Like, she didn't have a washroom, she didn't have a bathroom, like, nothing. Like, even her balcony door was bricked up so that she couldn't even watch like the sun. She didn't know what days were passing. Like, I know she may have killed up to 600 people, but this is horrific. Like, can you imagine being trapped in a room with your own filth and like just your own thoughts to keep you company? And like, she, there was no one that could treat her for her epilepsy, so she would frequently soil herself because you obviously lose control of your bowels and your bladder when you have an epileptic fit. I think that's kind of real sad.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I don't know whether to feel sorry for her or just be like,
but you'd rather them just kill sooner then, like.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Exactly. It's kind of like, I'd rather just die. Again, there's a little bit of debate about her death because, one, it says it was a circulatory problem where she complained to her guard about having cold hands and he was like, you'll be fine, just go to bed. And she just never woke up. Then another source kind of says that she starved herself to death because she was sick of her confinement. So she just refused to eat anymore. Then another is that, like, the movie, it's a bit weird. It's that she prays and she has a bunch of candles and the candles just, like, catch up on paintings and curtains and stuff like that and she just burns herself to death. I don't really buy into that one. So it's either the starvation or, you know, the circulatory problem. Okay. Because she was, I think, 53 when she died. But the thing is, according to the book, she never did die.
Oh.
Yeah. And that there is a little bit of evidence to support that. Thurzo felt sorry for her and came along and basically, like, threw everyone out of the castle, went up to her and, like, unbricked the wall and was like, right, here's the thing. I'm setting you free. Like, there's enough of this. I can't get around the king. And, like, you just can't. This is too much for even you. So he sent her off with, like, a carriage that would take her wherever she wanted to go. And she'd had a vision a couple of nights previous where she met Ferenc. And he was, like, back in his 30s. He was young again and beautiful and all that crack.
Yeah.
And he had said to her, like, you're not going to be confined forever. You will be released. You'll just have to wait. It's going to take a while. And when you are released, go to Italy. So apparently he released her and she escaped to Italy under a new identity. And the reason I'm saying there's a little bit of evidence to back that up is where she was meant to have been buried and her family tomb, both of them were exhumed and they couldn't find her body. So her body's on the missing list. Like, there is some saying that, like, she was buried in the cemetery of the town where she kind of ruled. And the peasants were like, nope, get that bitch out of our grounds. And then she was moved to her family cemetery, but her body was never found.
That's mad.
So it may well be that she escaped. But then, I mean, the long and short of it is that either she did kill all those people and she did bathe in their blood and she was this evil vampirus and, like, Lady Dracula and everything that they said about her. Or Thurzo and the king were greedy little bastards, didn't like that this woman had all this power, wanted to take it from her, framed her.
Made it all up.
Yeah, made it all up. So that's pretty much it. But I do have a lot more notes on the movie, but the amount I've spoken just from the book, I feel like I just don't need to mention it. I mean, it's a good watch, but there's a lot of random little things in it where it's like she had an affair with Caravaggio, the Italian painter, which, like, yeah, sure.
I come off it.
Exactly.
Like,
their timelines match up, but, like, I doubt it. I just doubt it.
Yeah.
And then there's other little things where this friar and his apprentice, like, it's the best part of the movie, is they come to investigate her because the church is getting suspicious of her activities. And they, like, they invent a camera. And they're recording, like, again, 1590. They're recording her, like, while she's in the bath because they're like, ooh, here she is bathing in blood. But then they get, like, a vial of it and it finds out it's just red herbs that she's bathing in. And there's, like, a part where they're sitting in a room and they have a cat on, like, a hamster wheel and it's powering the room with electricity. So they've, like, cat-powered lights.
Oh, for God's sake.
And then they invent roller skates. And then they make those roller skates wind up so that they, like, noom them up through the snow so that they can go uphill really fast.
I'm just kidding. Noom.
So again, yeah, if you're looking for accuracy, I mean, no offense to the movie because I love it. Like, I've been watching that movie since I was like 14, but it's not entirely accurate, but it could be accurate for the story of how she lived and died kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you want to really buy into the Blood Countess thing, which I do, obviously, because it's so much cooler, then yeah, the book is much better. So that's Bathory, Memoir of a Countess. And that is my story.
That was
that
intense.
That was a roller coaster.
A lot happens. Like, a lot happens. There's so much more that you could go into, but, like there's a lot more murders that I just didn't even take notes on because I was like, this is too much. Like, if I mention too much, it's going to get way too grim.
Oh my God.
I don't know how many cuts you'd need just to, like, to be like a shower of blood.
Yeah, this That's is a lot thing. Of cuts. Like, if it's, like, say the length of a regular person and say people were smaller back then, so probably, like, my height, like 5'3", then you've, like, a 5'3" cage or even 5-foot cage just lined from top to bottom on all sides with razors. So that's a lot.
But even as well, like, how many you would need to be able to bathe in it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, how many bodies you'd need.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, the way they describe it more so in the book is not that she bathed in it. It's that she covered her whole body in it with, like, a brush. So she'd paint herself with it and then she'd, like, get in a bath. She'd be bathed by Darvolia or whoever.
And then it'd drip, like, down on her and then she, like, spread it back out.
Yeah, you know, like, say with old-timey face shaving for men where they get the shaving foam kind of rubbed on with a brush.
It's like that one, do you remember Delphine Lalaurie or something like that? Do you remember?
Yes, exactly like that. Like American Horror Story. Yeah, exactly like that. That's all I could think of while I was reading about that part. Yeah. And then it'd be, like, washed off in the bath and she'd have olive oil massaged into her skin afterwards.
It was probably the olive oil that had her looking fine, not the blood. Did she even
Like, she had so many skin routines.
I think I'm great if I mix a serum with a moisturiser.
So, she bathes in blood and then moisturised and then was like, my skin is so soft because I bathed in blood.
Oh, yeah, sure, that probably had nothing to do with all of these, like, chambermaids that are constantly massaging you. And, like, they'd always go to mineral baths, and she had, like, crazy, like, skincare routines before all of this. They were just really well looked after. Like, she never had to do anything really stressful or work outside.
So she was never
outside,
so she had good skin because there was no sun damage.
Pretty much, yeah. That's what I think, obviously, because I don't
buy
into...
No, but Savannah, it's the blood.
...bathing in virgins, but yeah.
It's like, imagine the smell of that.
Ew.
And when it was warm as well. Oh, get out.
Well, I mean, I don't think...
You ever walk past a butcher's and you feel like vomiting. Can you imagine what that is like?
No. Blood smells really metally as well.
Yeah, you can really smell the iron, but like... I mean, they all probably smelled a bit back then because they didn't have deodorant, so that probably was a fresh scent to them.
She's probably the type who got beads like three times
a
day.
At one point, she goes to the market and buys a freaking spicy ginger-scented perfume. And I'm like, who the hell wants to smell like that? So, we don't question this woman.
No.
I also forgot to mention she actually framed the husband of the woman that he left for the younger model. She framed him for the murder of
the
young
one. For the young one's murder.
Yeah, and got him, like, ran out of town. And then she gave the wronged woman a castle. You know, in some ways she could be decent. In other ways, she was an absolute monster.
I mean...
Depending on what side of the story you buy into.
Yeah,
I mean, more
likely
she was framed. I do think she was just framed because jealous men wanted to take her lands and her wealth and her power.
No way, especially in a state that would have been so controlled by the church.
Yeah. Even for the time.
That shit's not going to fly.
Yeah, definitely.
And when she started taking the middle class girls, not a hope.
Yeah, you'd say fine with the peasants because
that was after
would have noticed them.
Yeah, that was after Ference's death. So, like, I do get that the man, the war hero, the whole thing, like, that would have protected her a little bit, but...
Yeah,
yeah, sure, once he died, she was vulnerable. They could have made up anything about it, and there's no one there to protect her. But it's more fun to believe in
it
the
really
blood
is.
Stuff.
So.
Yeah, makes for a better film and a better story when
so
you say it like that.
I mean, you can see why I kind of got obsessed with her, because they do touch on that a little bit in Stay Alive, but not a whole lot, but I was like, this sounds so cool, I'm going to see if she's real. And then she was real, and I was like, oh! And then, she's been my hero since I was, like, 12. So, so that's my story.
That was intense.
I mean, fair play. Well done.
So that
was
leaves you, Lizzie. What have you got for us?
Oh,
what
God.
Trauma would you like to inflict on us now?
You're not even ready, because when I first saw it, I couldn't comprehend how someone could go through that. And I'm just going to say now, she survived.
Oh, so it's
this
not
is
a murder.
A perfect survival story. No, of Mary Vincent.
Okay.
So I first seen this, I think it was about 10-odd years ago. And I was 12, so definitely too young to be watching that like that. Like, let's
like
be real.
Us all.
So this is from an episode of I Survived. So basically on that, like, they kind of cover, like, I Survived bear attacks, horrific car crashes, avalanches, whatever you can kind of think of.
Trapped in the Mountains and shit. I've been watching them recently.
Like, they're so good.
I've seen a couple episodes, but I don't remember Mary Vincent, so I don't think I know your story either.
You wait. Right, so we're going back to 1978. We're in Modesto, California, and Mary is only 15. So she's originally from Nevada, but I think she was after having, like, a bit of problems at home. I think her boyfriend was kind of a piece of shit. So she hitchhiked and fucked off to California.
Okay.
But after a while, like, she's 15. She's no money. She's nowhere to stay. And then you're lacking that human contact, so she gets so homesick. And decides, right, no matter how shitty my life is back home, I'm just going to go because it's better than being alone. So,
understandable.
Yeah, I mean, fair. But she decides to hitchhike back. And it is important to remember that hitchhiking was so normal in the 70s.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Everyone
like,
did
now
it back then.
You wouldn't even think about doing it. Yeah, exactly. Like, it was so normal.
No, I think it's actually illegal now, is it not?
It is, yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
It's definitely legal on, like, motorways and stuff over there. I don't know if it's illegal, like,
I feel like,
outright.
Probably
but
outright.
But this does take place on a highway, so...
And I feel like, I mean, not to be too psychic about it, but I feel like this story might be part of the reason it's illegal
now. More than likely, actually.
Just by your tone.
I mean, I'm going to say probably. So, she's waiting on the side of the road. She's holding up a sign, giving the direction she's going in. And then two other hitchhikers coming up behind her. They're also heading in the same direction she's going in. So, perfect. She has a bit of company. She's not waiting by herself. Then, a blue van pulls up beside the three of them. They can kind of see in the window and they notice that the back of the van is, like, completely empty. There's nothing in it. And this old man is driving it. So, when Mary first sees him, she's like, okay. He looks like a trusting grandfatherly figure.
Oh, they always do that.
Yeah. But he says he's only taken Mary and not the other two.
Oh.
So the other two were a bit older and were, like, warning her. They're like, please don't get in that van. It's like, it's weird. Why is he only going to take you and not us as well? Like, why just take the 15-year-old girl when you have plenty of room in the back of the van? But look, she's a kid at the end of the day. She's not going to listen. She's homesick. She's probably run out of money. She's probably fucking starving. Like, she just wants to get home. So she ignores all advice given to her and she gets in the van. And because she trusts him so much like that, she said, like, he was like a perfect old man. So, like, you've seen him walking down the road, you're going to give him a big hello. You're not going to think he's going to do anything to you. So when she gets in the car, she's wrecked. She falls asleep because she feels safe.
Oh, no.
So this is where I'm just going to warn, and also a bit of trigger warning as well. If sexual violence is hard for you, I probably wouldn't listen, to be honest. I probably would give it a skip. But anyway.
I mean, they probably tapped out after Cuiva's part, so.
Yeah, I just said I'd still give it a bit of a warning. So after a little while, she wakes up. She immediately looks out the window, but none of the road signs match up to where she should be going. So she's meant to be heading south, they're heading north. And after a couple of minutes, like once she gets herself together, she says it to him. She makes it known that, look, I know we're not heading in the right direction. And this kind of spooks him a little bit. So he quickly pulls over to the side of the road. He's like, I'll be back. I just need to pee. We'll get going.
Okay.
So how quick he pulls over, like, that really, really unsettles her. And she's thinking, okay, I'm starting to feel a little unsafe. He's about 60-odd. I have a good chance of getting away if anything goes wrong. But she looks down at her feet and she notices that her shoes are untied. And she's thinking to herself, fuck, if anything does happen and I have to run away, I need to tie these so when I do run, I can't be tripping up. She gets out of the van.
Clever girl.
Yeah, like, would have been a great plan. But she gets out of the van, goes down to tie her shoes. And that's when she is struck in the head with a sledgehammer.
Oh, God, sledgehammer.
Yeah, and she blacks out.
Of course.
Yeah, so she wakes up miraculously and she realises she's fully naked and tied up in the back of the van.
Oh.
So this is where, as if that like wasn't sick enough, but she's then raped for several hours into the next, like into the night and into the next day.
Oh.
And like despite the head wound and her bleeding so heavily from it, she's conscious for the entire time.
Oh, Christ.
She doesn't pass out, she doesn't go to sleep, nothing. And like, man, she's only fucking 15. So she recalls saying to herself, please God, kill me now, I can't handle it, set me free, just let me go. Oh. And muttering herself that, like, that's just,
that is so sad.
Can you even comprehend like being in that mindset? I don't know.
Hours.
I couldn't.
But after, anyway, he finished with her. Like, horrible way to put it, but
she's an object to him. That's how he would have seen it, I'm sure.
Yeah, like he like pulls her out of the van, right? She's still completely naked, bleeding still from her head. So I don't know how as well she's still standing after that. Like, the blood loss she would have had already is crazy, and still gets worse. So after he pulls her out of the van, obviously he heard her say, just set me free. He turns to her and say, you want to be set free? I'll set you free. He pulls out a fucking hatchet from a toolbox that was lying in the back of the van, takes her by her left arm and takes a big swing. So she could feel herself starting to fall. So like, she tried to latch onto him, obviously to save her fucking baiting off the ground. He took another big swing at her and she couldn't comprehend why she was still falling.
Mm-hmm.
He had hacked off her left arm.
Oh my God.
And she didn't realise. She
what
looked
the
down.
Fuck?
It's just a hacked from the elbow or below the elbow. So she just looked down and here was like her bloody stump just squirting blood and he's still swinging at her. So he keeps on swinging.
Oh my God.
Like, he is proper going to town on her and she's still awake. She feels it all. She doesn't pass out. And then he grabs her right arm and she starts to kind of struggle and fight as hard as she can to try and get away from him. So it takes a little bit longer, but in the end she was overpowered. He took her right arm clean off. So she now has a gaping head wound. Both of her arms are now gone from the elbow down. She's naked and she's lying in the middle of the road. He leaves to go towards the van and in the distance she can see him like shaking and flicking his arm and she's so confused. She's like, what the fuck is he doing? Like, it was so vigorous. But then after a couple of minutes she realises her arm was still clutched onto his after her holding onto him to try escape. So he was shaking off her fucking arm.
Oh,
is he what?
I know. And she survives and this isn't even like, this isn't even done yet.
I don't have words. I actually don't. I'm just going to let you continue. I can't comment on this. Carry on.
So, like I said, it gets worse. Somehow, it gets worse. So, still, despite being in excruciating fucking pain, she is fully awake. But as he's approaching her, like, she's thinking, okay, play dead. Because this is her only option at this point. Like, let's be honest. As he approaches her again, he picks her up and throws her down a 30-foot drop. So, it's off, like, a cliff. It's called the Del Puerto Canyon. And I, like, looked it up. It's not a straight drop. Not that I'm saying saying that it's any fucking better. Like, it's on like an incline, but it's 30 foot, and he just launches her down it. Because to him, he got rid of the body, didn't think there'd be such thing as fingerprints or anything like that. So according to him, he thought he was good. On the way down,
so he just rolled her down a really fucking steep
hill. Not rolled her. He launched her. Like, picked her. Her. Fucked off the side of it.
She has no arms. She has a head wound, and now she's just been yeeted down like a 30 foot.
And on the way
drop,
down,
like,
she's after breaking four ribs. So
she's all
together, head wound, no arms, four ribs.
Oh my god.
So coupled up with those injuries, her body just goes into shock.
Oh my god.
Still, like, she's kind of in and out of consciousness now, but she was still terrified to even attempt to move because she didn't know if he was gone or if he's waiting up there for me. Oh. If I get out and he's just going to kill me. So she just lies there thinking, like, I'll just accept it now. She can feel herself starting to drift, but then she hears a voice, and the voice says to her, you can't go to sleep. He's going to do this to somebody else. So I don't know what, if that was like her consciousness being like, no, get up, or if you believe in that and signs from spirits aren't like that. I don't know.
It was
whatever
something,
is comforting.
Something
was looking out for her. 100%. So after she heard that voice, it was just like a snap, and she got so clear in her mind, and she's like, I'm going to survive. So she sticks her bleeding stumps into the ground to kind of pack them full of mud, as so they're not like, not cauterizes it, but like it stops the bleeding. It slows it down. Yeah.
God.
So she then climbs up the 30 foot the canyon on her bloody fucking stumps and makes it on to the highway.
Oh,
it takes her all night, but she fucking does it, and still in bits as well, by the way. So she can hear the faint sound of the traffic, and I want to say it's the I-5 or something like that. It's like a really big highway in California.
Okay.
Anyway, but she can hear the noise of the traffic in the distance, so she knows she's kind of close.
Okay.
So by the time she'd reached the top, like I said, it was pitch black, so all she has to see her way around is moonlight. There's
this
no
girl,
street lamps, no nothing.
Like, most people wouldn't have survived.
And I mean, her vision
van.
Could not have been good,
like,
with the amount she's suffering.
No,
most
no.
Most people,
I
like, that, they're like, dead after
no.
the sledgehammer.
I would have died before I got
like,
hit in the head.
That should, I'd say, have killed her, like, that whack with the sledgehammer.
Honestly,
so how she's still going is just fucking beyond me.
Definitely.
But the first car she meets, it's driven by two lads in a convertible. As soon as they see her, they freak the fuck out and keep on driving. But she said herself, it's understandable. Like, she looked like something out of a horror movie.
Yeah.
Like, she was
that's the scariest
naked,
thing
bleeding
ever.
Bleeding from everywhere. She was filthy and all, like, illuminated by moonlight. Like, she looked fucking terrifying. But as well, like, I know they were probably scared, but imagine what they feel like now, because they would have heard that on the news at
I
some point.
I was just
point,
thinking
like,
that.
Fuck. And didn't do anything. Like, that must still haunt them.
You
like,
know,
I know she was fine.
They knew
end.
That they drove
not
past
fine,
her.
But she lived. But she doesn't
like,
make it
some,
any better.
Like,
yeah, for
they
them.
Probably thought she was some sort of ghost or something, because
you
don't
see that shit. Yeah.
Someone alive to
a
be in that state.
A fucking naked girl coming up off a drop that's 30 foot. Like, they probably know the area, so they know that. She comes up, she's naked and has stumps for
hands. I mean, not to be presumptuous of these people, but it was the 70s, so there's every chance.
Oh,
alive.
More than likely.
So,
more than likely.
You know, you're seeing that and you're already kind of a little bit.
Yeah. Not a good time. Like, but she keeps on walking, and thank fucking God the second car stops. So it's a newlywed honeymooning couple, and they took the wrong turn and they just ended up on her path. So they weren't even meant to be there in the first place.
Wow.
But as soon as they saw her, they pulled over, loaded her into the back of the truck, and raced to a payphone.
Oh my
so
God,
a rescue
comes.
Helicopter actually then came and brought her to the hospital. So at the moment, she's kind of safe, but she was after losing half of the blood
Jesus
in her body, which
imagine.
I mean, of course,
God.
I'm surprised.
Like, your
it wasn't
arms
more.
Or arteries,
yeah.
Like, it's
yeah.
just.
I don't know how.
I cannot fathom how this woman survived.
But then the remaining blood that was left in her reached a toxic level.
Oh,
so
no.
It was very, very touch and go. But Mary is a fucking fighter, and she pulls through. She was able to give the cops a perfect description of the man that attacked her. And 10 days later, Lauren Singleton was arrested after a neighbour positively identified him through his sketch that Mary had given to the police. She was friends with him and all, and she's like, I don't give a shit.
Oh,
this
I'm
is
snitching.
It.
If that's
yes,
me and
so,
I see someone,
and this was,
I'm
oh,
I am.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
I wouldn't care. I mean, if I heard that and that was my own mother, I'd
absolutely.
Snitch. Like, that is not something you protect somebody for. That is
absolutely
sick.
Not. So this was 10 days after the attack. So quick enough, I think, for like back in the day. Like back in the day, like it was fucking a millennia, but like 10 days after like them getting her, she was put through all her stuff and conscious then to be able to give a detailed description. And then between like that being posted out everywhere and finding him, I don't think like 10 days is a lot, to be honest. But so anyway, he was brought to trial, and Mary bravely stood in front of him and told the judge and the jury every single thing that he did for her, like including like the countless hours of rape. I don't know how she did it, but fair fucking play to her. This is actually a bit upsetting. So he was convicted of rape and attempted murder and received the maximum sentence. But due to California law at the time, maximum sentence was 14 years.
What?
14
years. Are you serious?
Yeah, and it gets worse. So as he passed her by in court, he looked her dead in the eye and said, if it's the last thing I do, I'm going to finish
the
job.
Oh my God.
What? Like, that's like, if she wasn't going to be haunted for the rest of her life and now have like the promise, like, because he's not being put away for life. She knows he's getting out in 14 years. No. Unless he commits something in prison.
And he was in his 60s, so he's going to be like 70 odd when he comes out. That, you know, you could still be sprightly enough at 70 odd to go out and commit another murder. Like.
But what's even more upsetting is he got let out early on good
behaviour.
Oh
my God.
After
no.
8 years.
They
were trying.
For cutting her fucking
8 years,
arms
that's
off.
All he did. For her attempted murder, assault, the whole lot was only 8 years. Throwing her off a cliff, baiting her head in with a fucking sledgehammer, 8 years. So good as God. He was let out, they were trying to figure out where to put him. So they were going to send him down to family in Tampa. But once press got wind of this, there was rallies to get him the fuck out. They didn't want them in their town. So they were trying to figure out like different places to put them. So they tried a good like bunch of different cities. So like that you had Tampa, then there was trying to place him in San Francisco, like a load of different places. Nowhere would take him. So in the end, they ended up having to put a trailer in San Quentin, which is the prison. Sorry, have said that he was locked up in. They put a trailer in fucking San Quentin for him to stay there for a year on his parole because nowhere else would take him.
I mean, I don't blame the towns. I wouldn't take him either.
Imagine having to stay on the like grounds of the prison because you're that much of a
fucking cunt. I don't understand how he got out
no
on good behaviour if he literally threatened her.
Yeah, there should be
trial.
No thing as good behaviour for somebody.
It doesn't matter. He's
no.
Still, he clearly was a model prisoner for
model prisoner.
The,
model prisoner
with the intention of getting out to recommit.
I mean, of course he's not going to kill anyone or
no.
And there's no way, like, he wasn't going to harm anybody in prison because they're not 15 year old girls.
And she
like,
definitely wasn't the only person.
Well, he
like,
sounds like
no.
He was
that,
very practiced at
that's
it,
what
like.
I think
like if he
yeah. Like, he hasn't been charged for anything else, but I do think there have to have been others because there's no way you get to that level of
like,
escalation and know what you're going
to
do.
He knew to
on
untie her shoes while she was asleep on the sly. He knew to have a sledgehammer. He had a hatchet in the back. He had a toolbox in the back of his van. He knew to only like he knew what he was doing. He knew a good spot to throw her off.
Yeah, like 100%. That was 100% premeditated. That is organized. That is a mid-level serial killer. Like, that is not the start of a career. That is halfway through it. That's when you're skilled.
You're
know practiced. What you're
like he knows. Even if he hasn't done it before, he's researched and he's really, really thought about it and he's figured out what he
of
wants
course,
to
yeah.
do. Like
yeah.
he did that good of a job. If she had actually died,
no one would have found
no
her.
No one would have found her.
A long
no
time.
One would have
yeah.
found him. Nobody
yeah.
would have known it was
like,
him.
Like how many missing cases?
Like, the only
there.
People that would have been able to identify him were the people that would have
been,
yeah. been there hitchhiking, and even then how would they ever even have known she was missing because they weren't locals
no.
clearly.
So what happened next?
So like that he got paroled early in 1987, had to do a full year of good behaviour until he was allowed to move out of the trailer in San Quentin.
Okay.
So he's kind of bopping around the place, and then 10 years later in 1997 Singleton was sentenced to death in Florida for the gruesome murder of a mother of three.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Called Roxanne Hayes. She was only 31 years old. So like times were tough. She was trying to support her family, so she was a sex worker. Like she did what she had to do
oh,
to support
Lord,
her family.
Okay.
Yeah. So Singleton apparently paid her $20. He accused her of trying to rob more from him. He stabbed her in the face and neck 12 times.
Oh.
And the like a next door neighbour heard the commotion and rang the police, and apparently when they went to the door he answered it with a ripped open bloodied vest. Like there was no fucking denying.
Didn't even try to hide.
Didn't even fucking try to hide it. So anyway, for her trial, Mary flies back down to Florida and gives her evidence and statement again of what he did to her to try pull him away for good now. Because like this totally fucked her up as well, because she was still so paranoid that he was going to come find her again. So she like has to live with her new disability. And now one as well, PTSD. And the like the ever looming fear
he's
that he's
going
to come back and he's going to fucking finish it.
Yeah.
It was a joke. But unfortunately, he is found guilty and sentenced to death.
Yes.
Save that fucking clap. Save that clap.
Oh no.
Yeah, don't even. It's not a time to celebrate at the moment because.
Lizzie, you are giving me an aneurysm.
Sorry, no. He would never face execution because. He died of cancer on death row. Ugh. And did not have his brain turned to soup like
oh,
he should
fuck
have.
Off.
With all of the stories, apart from mine, of course, but yours
yeah,
and Grief's stories seem to be
but
that karma got them before the justice system could. But, like, I'm sorry, that's not good enough. You need to feel the pain that,
yeah. Like,
you need to
no,
know
No, I
you
want
put
some
these people
proper
through.
Street justice. It's fucking sick.
Like, if you look him
now,
up as
bit,
well,
so
he's
it's kind
disgusting.
Of a bit better.
Huh?
He's disgusting as well if you look
oh.
him up.
A sick
like not that it would
pig.
Make it better if he was good looking, but he's actually
mank. So
like
what were you gonna say, go on?
Nothing, I'm just...
No, finish that thought, because this is a lot to process, I understand.
I don't think there even was a thought, like, I'm in the same state. It's just, there's a lot of like going on, but
it's
yeah.
just a constant...
It's just
pouring
in my brain.
Out of our misery, let's...
Yeah, this is slightly positive, because that was just fucking horrible, so... Well, this bit's still a bit shit, but, like, due to her reconstructive surgery, Mary could no longer, like, pursue her love and career in dance, aww. But she found a new love for painting.
Oh, wow!
Yeah, so she has her prosthetics and she's able to aww. Do it. And she later in life, she got married, she had two kids, she went to the University of Nevada and became a survivor and victims advocate and hoped her story would prevent young girls from hitchhiking and the dangers that are surrounding it. And that is the batshit, unbelievable survival story of Mary Vincent. And I just want to actually quickly credit my sources. Majority of it did come from, like that I said, the I Survived TV show, but for the little bits after it, like Lauren Singleton, where he was staying, the San Quentin thing, that came from www.criminallyintrigued.com and morbidology.com. That's where I kind of got the later in life parts for her story. But I do highly recommend you do go and watch her episode. Mm. I want to say it's in season 4 of the I Survived, and just hear her tell her story. That's, herself.
Yeah, I mean,
it's crazy.
I doubt it would ever happen. But Mary Vincent, if you ever stumble upon our episode of this podcast, I just want to say
I love you so much.
On behalf of all of us, you are an inspiration.
An inspiration.
You are a hero. You are just absolutely, to all women, you are just an icon. And thank you for doing what you did to try and raise awareness, because a lot of people would hide in their shell after something like that happening, and you fucking didn't.
You fought fucking through it and tried to help other people, which I think is just one of the most selfless things you can do.
I know it's a very slim chance that this may ever be heard, but if you're out there, if you ever hear this, if anyone knows her and ever hears this, please pass it on. I commend you. I applaud you. I do anything. I am wow. I don't have words for how amazing
that woman is.
That was incredible. Please look it up, because we talked about a lot of heavy details and they're all really interesting stories in their own right. And, you know, for our case, for the victims that were killed and stuff like that, and the victim that survived, you kind of owe it to them to honour what they've been through and what they've done to learn their story. So if you have a chance to check it out, definitely check out any of the sources we're going to mention. We're going to link this all in our social. That's going to be at cesspoolpod at instagram.com or at cesspoolpod at Twitter. We'll also have an email if you guys have any questions, you want to ask us anything, you want to send us more details. If anyone knows any more about the things we've talked about, we would love to hear it.
Feel free to like correct us, because I'm not saying I'm 100% right, like at all. I'm more than likely not. So go ahead, or like that, if you have any cool stories.
Yeah, you want to hear us talk about
anything.
If you
have any suggestions for cases that we should do, you know, cases that you want to hear covered could be interesting, or even just topics that you think, you know, opinion topics or anything that you think
you
could be discussed.
You want to send that on to us? That's cesspoolpod@gmail.com. That is cesspoolpod@gmail.com. Send it all on to us. We want to hear from all three people that may have listened to this. Tell your friends, we're nice people. Yeah, so next week we hope to come back to you guys with something a little bit more lighthearted, less grim. We're going to be talking about folklore that we really enjoy. We are not organized, but somehow
we
all accidentally ended up picking water spirits.
I mean, we're just all
in
sync.
It should be an interesting one. It's going to be a little bit shorter than this, I hope.
I mean, like, this is a very good introduction as into how thick we are.
So yeah, if you're interested in that, please come back and check us out next week.
Thank you so much as well for listening.
We appreciate whoever joined us for this. We hope
if
you
we
come
haven't
back
scared
in future.
You off,
thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Tell your friends. I swear we're nice people. I swear we're not as messy as it sounds. Thank you for coming. I have been your host, Savannah, and just want to remind you to always be a hypocrite.
Don't forget to tense your ankles.
And join our cult. Thank you for listening.
Quiva, do you want to fucking speak?
You're such a fucking disaster, Quiva. I swear to God.
Yes, Quiva, you are. This is why we're a mess.